is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 17, season 21. A strange old episode because at this point, normally I'd be bringing in Ryan or John or Jack or Trev or somebody else. I'm home alone. For various reasons, the boys can't be with me this week, mainly down to me and having a poorly little toddler. The good news is that the rest of the podcast was all done earlier in the week. So we've got some fantastic guests, to be perfectly honest with you. We've alluded to it on Twitter, I think, over the last 24 hours. We've got the fantastic Mark Duez, who's going to be joining us very, very shortly. And then we've got Blair Bartels over from Rally New Zealand, one of the men who works on Rally New Zealand, runs the New Zealand Rally Championship, and talking to us about Jack's Ridge, which was something that our own Jack was talking about the other week, which had this array of talent taking up the super special stage that would have been used on Rally New Zealand. And we talk all about that, and we talk all about some of the guys over there and how healthy the New Zealand Rally Championship is and what it's going to look like for 2021 as well. But this week was only ever going to be a cheering episode. And what I mean is by that, we were just going to be basically saying, come on, Elvin, come on, Scott, bring it home, bring it home. We're going to be unashamedly biased. So all the boys, I'm sure, were going to be on the same page as me anyway. So we were only going to be saying the same things. The beauty of having another one of our guests, we've got Tom Williams, of course, who you may remember did JWRC, and we always checked in on Tom to see how he was getting on. Tom's making his WRC2 debut this weekend on Monza, so we got a piece with Tom just as he just finished the recce. Some of the pictures now that you've seen will back up what he was saying in this particular piece anyway. So we've got Tom, who just finished the recce for Monza as well, right at the end of this particular pod. So you'll get a proper bird's eye view from somebody who just drove those stages. And we're now seeing these, I don't know, are they fabulous images? I don't know. Are they fabulous? I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how I'd feel, to be honest with you, because I think we all got into a mindset of tarmac rally, Italy, it was all going to be fine. And I think probably our first kind of news that we got, we heard, you know, rumours that Michelin were taking their winter tyre and things like that. And then all of a sudden, we started to see images of snow and things like that, which has completely and utterly made it a very, very different prospect, I suppose, for all the drivers. But we only care about one right now. One crew that in particular, it's Elvin and Scott. We just desperately want them to win it. I think it'll do wonders anyway for the sport. Having another world champion, obviously we had Oit last year, but breaking it up and having new drivers, having that number one on the draw the following season, I think there's a lot to be said for it. So and of course we do class him as one of our own as well, both him and Scott. So we're desperate for those guys to bring it home this weekend. It is going to be a fascinating event. Tom talks about it a little bit in the piece at the end, but something which we probably would have been talking about is the fact that it is a new event, and people are going to be writing their own notes for the first time on those particular stages, which, you know, there's a lot to be said for repetition in WRC. And, you know, a lot of the time notes do get brought back out because it is repetition of stages or whatever, or certainly sections of stages. Obviously this one isn't going to be like that. Everyone's writing from a clean sheet of paper from day one of the recce. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I really do. And I'm so glad I was kind of wrong in some ways, that I had big fears, and I don't know whether I voiced them to some degree publicly, that we were only going to get effectively a single venue in the circuit. That obviously now is now not the case. We've got these fantastic stages that we are seeing images from up in the mountains. Monty-esque, I think, is the best way of putting it. But just very, very excited for this weekend. I'm just sorry the boys couldn't be with me. Unfortunately, as I say, I've got a poorly little toddler boy who's having to stay home, so I can't go into the studio. But there you go, little home studio, managed to get it going. The cat's watching me, wondering what I'm doing, but that's fine. He's a bit of an idiot anyway, I think I've mentioned him before, but there you go. Listen, folks, it has been a unique season. We are on episode 17, as I said at the top. There will be episode 18 next week, which of course will hopefully be looking back on a successful Rally Monza for both Elvin and Scott and Toyota Gazoo. But we will go of course, look back on the events and we'll talk about it and we'll dissect it and we'll go through it with all the boys. So yeah, this week that was only going to be a sharing episode anyway. So we decided to put what I call some proper content in as well. And we try to pull rabbits out of the hat with guests and try to do things a little bit different from time to time as well with our guests and bringing in different people. The response from the Ken Reese piece last week was fantastic. Thank you for the lovely messages on that. I genuinely felt Ken's somebody that I've known a little bit for quite a long time, actually. And Ryan's obviously known for a hell of a long time, but very much an untapped source. Because obviously there's lots of people doing what we do now. So we have to be smart with our guests as well these days. So that's why we don't kind of preview now, because, you know, we're all trying to get the same people, I guess, at times. But still, there you go. Healthy competition and all that makes it all the better for everybody, for you guys downloading it. And we do appreciate the downloads, by the way. So anyway, I'm now starting to rabbit on because clearly I'm on my own. And the cat's never going to respond to any of my comments on Monza for this weekend. So without further ado, we're going to go to a little break and we're going to come back with Mark Duez. Then we're going to have Blair Bartels from the New Zealand Rally Championship. And just to finish off, we're going to have Tom Williams, as I say, who just finished that recce on Monza.
Hi, everyone. This is John Desborough, commentator and presenter on the World Rally Championship. I'm hoping you've seen my debut novel, Breaking Point. If you haven't, check it out on eBay. It's a rollercoaster ride of deceit and blackmail from a golden age of the WRC. And like a good rally, it starts fast and gets faster. Breaking Point, by me, John Desborough, on eBay, now for $7.99.
Now, our next guest on the show has had a fantastic career in motorsport, not just in rallying. Welcome to Absolute Rally, Mark Duez.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you to call me. It's a little revival of my young days.
Well, I mean, you've had an amazing career in motorsport, and we'll chat. Many of our listeners will know of your rally career and a long rally career it was. But I mean, at the same time, you've had an incredible racing career as well. Did you always plan to try and do both racing and rallying together?
Not at all. I could not make any plans because I had no money. So I accept and I rent cars in both categories. Little cars with little potential, and it was the only way to start. And I won the racing school in Belgium. My father had a hotel restaurant, and all the people and the companies who were selling food, they were a little bit of sponsor for me. And for this reason, one day I rent a Toyota Celica from TTE, from O. Anderson, who was in Belgium, to the Belgian importer, and who was his friend. And Ove Anderson, who had no idea about the Belgian drivers, believed I was a well-known driver, and it was my first rally ever. and it was a surprise, but it was too late. And I finished the rally in fifth position overall with a Toyota Celica GT Group 2. And what was important, I was beating Gilbert Stapola, who was the official Ford works driver in Belgium. And he was also the manager of the Ford Motorsport in Belgium. And he was going to retire. And because of that, The Tuesday after the rally, he invited me in Antwerp at the Ford Motor Company Motorsport, and he proposed me to drive the year after and share the drive from his escort group 4 with Robert Drukmans and Patrick Smith, and all begins from that point in my rally career.
Wow!
With luck.
But an incredible opportunity, and I mean, you've just talked about Robert Drukmans, Patrick Steyers, and it was a really an iconic period for Belgian rallying at the time as well, with the tobacco sponsorship that led on to your your real career.
Yeah, exactly. We were lucky in Belgium. You know, we are helped by the daily press in the newspapers. All the newspapers in Belgium, they have, let's say, minimum during the weekend or twice or each day, the last or the page before the last for motorsport. And we had a lot of return for the sponsors through the press, and it was really important for the motorsport and for the drivers. I was lucky to have a good press, and this helped me to keep my sponsor more than a week. So I was lucky in many circumstances, but I had the chance to drive very good cars and with very good co-drivers in rally, and I had contacts because of that in a period when you did some good results. You was looked by managers and team owners, and this is how it starts with, for example, Toyota. And it was only a question of contacts and opportunity, because I never had money to start in motorsport in one or in the other discipline. So I had a good career, a long career, and a fantastic souvenir. I had in parallel also a career in circuit racing, and also with factory contracts, and it was, I think I was the only driver who had a contract with BMW, the factory, in the same time as Toyota in the factory. So I was driving Toyota in rally sport, and I was driving BMW in circuit racing. So one day it finished because the people from BMW were not, from Toyota in Belgium, were not very happy to see a guy, one of their drivers, driving a BMW and beat the Toyotas in Belgium. So it ends the collaboration.
I mean, and that's probably what a lot of our listeners don't realize is, you know, you had this incredible racing career, and you said you were a factory driver for BMW. You won the Nürburgring 24-hour race several times. You won the Spa 24-hour race. You raced at Le Mans as well. I mean, did you ever at any point think, okay, now I'll just concentrate on racing, or now I'll concentrate on rallying, or did you just literally take the opportunities as they came?
Exactly. I never focused on one specialty, because I'm not a specialist. I'm a good driver, but I'm not the best. I can do anything, but to focus on one specialty, I will be always beaten by specialists, and I'm not a specialist. Like a doctor, you know, you have a doctor, a generalist, but they are not surgeon. So I had the luck to have a long career because I was doing many things. I'm sure if I was making a choice, or rally or circuit, I would have been a butcher or or alcoholic, or I don't know what, or sexual mad. But so this is because I had many opportunities in both specialities, so that I could have a long career.
I think there's a lot of drivers would happily take your career in either racing or rallying, and you've had it in both. But your long-time sponsor in rallying through the 80s was of course Belga, and that, you know, we look back on the tobacco liveries as iconic liveries, and maybe your Metro 6R4 is probably one that British fans will remember, because you drove the Porsches and then you were a factory driver for Austin Rover through the Rover and then the Metro.
Yes, exactly. So we were helped by the press, by all the publicity of the cigarette companies, and they were the only one with proper sponsorship money, and I was lucky to be one of their drivers. And I was doing for Belgium, for example, I was doing single seater in Formula Ford. I was doing Le Mans with the 936. I was doing Porsche in rally, which was I was champion in rallies. And then the Audi Quattro. So it was a long period with this cigarette company. And after that, I was with Marlboro in France, with Austin Rover, and also Bastos, another Belgian company, cigarette Belgian company, which doesn't exist anymore, with ProDrive, with the BMW, and it was most sponsor of Patrick Snyers, but I was part of the team. So you know these companies in Belgium were focused on motorsport, which is now this is difficult to find a sponsor who make the choice of motorsport to organize his own publicity, because the motorsport at this time was had a very good image, and now you know the society is changing and the mentality is changing, so a shame for the young drivers, because most of the sponsors are who are in sports, they are making choice of bicycling or football or different sport, and okay, some in Formula One, of course, and motorbikes, but for the national championships and Europeans, it is difficult to find a sponsor without making a deal, a win-win, because the prices are not the same anymore. You can think that it is 3-4 times the price from these days. So this is difficult for the young drivers now.
And one thing that sticks in my mind recently is there's a YouTube channel here called VHS Rallies that's transferring all the old videos onto YouTube. And the one that came up recently, you did the Austin Rover Rally Sprint against the Grand Prix drivers. And I think you actually won, yes. won that. So both racing and rallying, the rare chance to do both in one event. That looked like great fun at the time.
It was. Not supposed to do this rally sprint. Tony Pond was designed was the driver who was supposed to do it, but he was busy in South Africa for I don't know what sort of business. And John Davenport asked me if I was interested to do it, and I said of course, because I could see on TV the proper drivers in Formula One and rally. Driving against each other and making a big show in nice areas. I did it. But it was, and I won this rally sprint, but it was the end of rally sprint because nobody knows me. And I was driving against Mansell, Brundle, Watson, Rosberg, Jimmy McRae, Pierre Coon, Michel Mouton, and all these fantastic stars, drivers. They are normally supposed to win this sort of race to keep this race alive. But I was an unknown guy, and it was the end of the race. I'm very sorry for them, but I'm so happy for myself. It was my greatest event, because I remember driving in front of Rosberg and Mansell in Donington, watching in my mirror, and these guys, the week before, they were fighting in the South African Grand Prix with the Williams for 1,000 horsepower Formula One, big stars, and they were trying to follow me. It was a dream. It was something else.
Yeah, and great to see, you know, again, you talked about how society has changed. I mean, I just cannot imagine, you know, Lewis Hamilton today driving, I don't know, a Ford Mondeo against Oit Tanak or whoever it might be. You know, it's such a shame those events have gone. But, I mean, we'll come back to your racing in a little while. But I mean, your rally career has featured so many incredible cars, from the Group 4 cars through the Group B era, and then of course the Group A rear wheel drive cars, four wheel drive cars, F2 cars, World Rally cars, and then even Super 1600 cars. I mean, just we could talk all day about the cars you've driven, but which ones stick in your mind looking back over the rally cars you've driven?
The Audi Quattro was the first modern car, which was the first four-wheel drive, and I won Spa Rally immediately with this car because it was on snow, and I was against drivers like Tony Pond who were trying to follow with a two-wheel drive car. So it was a big step. Before that, the Porsche was a fantastic car, and then the Metro was the wildest car. It was really wild, but really interesting. And after the BMW M3 by ProDrive, it was my best season ever, because I won the Belgian Championship and I finished always first in the rear-wheel drive in the World Championship. This category was not existing, but I did some good results on tarmac and, also... In Portugal, in San Remo, the car was really spectacular, and the fans loved this car. And the car was really well prepared, of course. And it was a dream to drive this car, because it was like an Escort Group 4, but more modern and more fast and more efficient. And it was the motorsport who I loved. And this is why I really enjoy to have the possibility to change from one category to the other. After the entry, I was driving Ford Sierra and then Seat WRC and things like that, and Seat Ibiza front-wheel drive, many cars. And, this is nice to change the cars and the type of cars, and this is interesting in the life. And when you start in February, Boucle de Spa, and then you fly to Daytona immediately, and then you come back and you drive a rally in Germany, for example, and then you go again in Sebring, and then you do Nürburgring 24s. And I was so pleased to be involved in big teams and works cars, and works team had the opportunity to meet fantastic people, fantastic teams. I had the chance discover the world, the big names through the motorsport, and this is. Which is a nice life.
I mean, an incredible array of cars you drove, both in racing and rallying. And you know, from, like you've just said, you know, you've been maybe competing in Belgium, flying to America, back again. Did you find it, two things really, did you find it easy to change quickly from racing to rallying? And also, do you think competing in both disciplines helped your driving?
You know, it was not so bad, because I was driving every weekend. I was driving all the time. I was in the movement, and because of that, I took less time to get used of driving another car than another driver, because I was always driving and sometimes testing during the week. So I was always driving. This is and then you adapt yourself to a race car, and a race car, what is the speciality? You are alone in the car, nobody is talking to you, and you are against the world, and you have to be immediately in the competition, because 1 second you lose in the beginning, it's still 1 second. And in rally sport, this is different. You are not alone. This is a team effort. And you win with your co-driver, and without a good co-driver you are nothing. And you with the experience of racing, I was immediately fast in the beginning of the rally, because it was an experience who helped me in the other category.
Now, we're a rally podcast, but with your career, we can't help but talk about your racing, because as well as some incredible rally cars, I mean, to have driven things like the Porsche 962, the McLaren F1 at Le Mans, I mean, they're iconic cars in racing. How was Le Mans and competing through the night in that era, through the 90s? I mean, that must have been an incredible experience in itself.
I had the chance to drive Le Mans with all the chicanes, and my first Le Mans ever was with the Porsche 936, which was a Group C, and it was racing in the same time as the new 956, which ground effect, and our car was a car without ground effect, but very, very fast. And you know, this long Mulsanne straight, it was more than a minute flat out, over 300, 330, 350 k's an hour. And during this minute, you have the time to think. And when you think, you don't always think positive. You think, if something happens, I will minimum be dead. And the car was so fast, and it was frightening. But I haven't not the chance to do the 24 hours this year, because my car retired after 24 minutes. So, but in the practice, we were fast, and but it was a frightening experience, because the security was not the same as now. And these days, you had sometimes fatal accidents, and a sport you have to consider with humble effect. You have to respect this sport, because if you are not able to do it correctly, you put your life in danger. Now it's more safe, and the people don't think it's dangerous sometimes. When something happens, it is more not due to the track or the car, but it is due to accidents, contact between cars in bad areas. But and in rally, this is different, because you still drive through the forest at high speed, through the villages, and the cars are a lot better in safety than before. But still, a rally driver respect more his sport than a race driver, because he's not in full safety.
Okay, interesting to hear. And I mean, you're still involved very much in the sport today, and you're still competing sometimes in rallying as well. But you also work with the FIA and the RACB out of the car now.
Yes, I'm a coach of the RACB national team. We are searching new talents, and we have good drivers. We had, for example, Thierry Neuville, and you have to know that Thierry Neuville arrived where he is now, and it took him 50 euros because he did the selection, he won the selection, and after that we were helped by an importer. And then we had the opportunity to bring him in the World Championship, and then he was considered as a professional. We met my friend Malcolm Wilson, who helped him a lot too, and then he was gone as a professional, and it was for us something fantastic. In the other way, in circuit, we had different drivers like Bertrand Baguette, who is a guy who is doing a career in Japan now. But we also bring Stoffel Vandoorne in Formula One at McLaren. And also, without paying anything, he never paid anything. These two drivers were poor guys. they were not rich. They had no money from their parents, or now they are really professional. They are fantastic drivers, and they reached the top level. And I think we can be proud at the Belgian Federation to help these guys. How can we help them? We do a selection, and from that, the winner receive a national program at a low price. And we with the Lotto and different partners, we pay this program, and we invest on them on 2 years. And when they have an opportunity to go on higher category with some financial, we give them the opportunity to have a base sponsorship money. And if they reach three times this amount as professional during the 3 next year, they have to bring to give this money back. And this money helped the new selection of new drivers in their beginning of career. So this is Neuville, when he was professional and win some money, he gives some money back to the national RACB national team, and this money helped a young driver to a certain level. And it was the same for Van Doorn, it was the same for Baguette, it was the same for Fantor. And so this is the only way to help young drivers. The Belgian Federation is not rich, but with this system, we could still survive for more than 10 years. And now we have a young driver who start rally. And but this guy only did one rally in his life, and because of the COVID-19, he did only one little rally sprint. So we will help him next year again. We had another one in the WTCR, and he was doing well. His name is Gilles Magnus. He was driving the Audi, and he finished fifth overall in the classification. He was best rookie. And he did very nice races, and this guy has the potential to have he could be a professional for the rest of his motorsport career. So, and the other side, I'm at the FIA in the Drivers Commission, and I'm a driver advisor in WTCR since 3-4 years, and I'm also clerk, the deputy clerk of the course in Monaco Formula One and in Spa Formula One, and I'm also a race director for the historic Grand Prix in Monaco. So I'm quite busy, and I'm organizing track days, I'm organizing private events, and so my events are of course linked to the cars and to the motorsport, because I have no chance to be a big surgeon, a minister, a king, or or
Mark,
gynecologist.
Mark, can I just ask a question, Mark? The system you've just described, just to finish off, because I'm really conscious of how much time we've taken, but the system you've just described for young Belgian drivers, are you surprised that other parts of the world don't adopt this system? Because we're crying out for something like this in the UK, and have done for a number of years. But we're always shocked from this side of the pond, if you like, when we hear about what you guys do over there, that we can't do it. Does it surprise you?
As I told you, we were lucky to have this press who had the motorsport, and we were lucky to be involved at this time, this period in the motorsport. You know, Belgium is not better than any other countries now. It's difficult now. We are lucky to have a track like Spa, which is well known. But we have good teams. We have some good managers in Belgium, and we are smaller than Great Britain, so we can focus on less drivers than you guys. And I have no answer for that. You have the top drivers in all over the world, and of course in England, most of the top drivers are coming from England, and because you have the proper tracks, fantastic tracks, natural and modern, you have top rally drivers because you have proper forest. You have gravel. In Belgium, we have no gravel. Neuville was the only one to be categorized a specialist in gravel because I think he's the only one. We are mixed between tarmac and gravel. We have mixed rallies. But you have in England the potential to find fantastic drivers. And the problem is now this is the finance, and it's really difficult for teams to exist without sponsorship money and money from the drivers. And this period of time is more difficult than before, I think.
Absolutely. Mark, listen, we could probably talk all day with regards to the days of Group B and obviously racing and everything else, but we're conscious of obviously we're eating into your time as well. So I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for joining us on Absolute Rally this week.
Thank you very much. Look, we can talk, as you said, hours, but it is better to talk at the bar.
Good man.
With all the fans and
Mark Dewis, thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much anyway, Ryan.
Thank you.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. My bad, you may remember, we talked long and hard about doing something with regards to the event that went over in New Zealand. Jack flagged it up. We had the Jack Riggs event. We also had the stage event, which was taken in the WRC stages that would have happened this year. We got all excited. We had Blair Bartell lined up from the event and the guy behind the New Zealand Rally Championship. And the record didn't work. So me and Blair had a lovely chat, but none of you heard it, which I think is really, really unfair because really interesting guy. And I'm really interested to see what's going on with rallying in New Zealand in not only in the current climate, but also possibly in the future as well. So Blair, apologies, but for the first time for recording, welcome back to Absolute Rally anyway.
Absolute pleasure to join you again.
We had a lovely chat, didn't we, Blair?
Absolutely, but I feel I'm in far better company this week, to be fair. I feel like I'm a little bit of a small fish in a big pond with some of the guests you've had on this week.
No, mate, honestly, it's this is ground zero. Everybody's equal. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. The only way we do it. That's the only way we do it. So I suppose, really, it'd be amiss of us to not kind of go back over the chat that we had that nobody heard, really. But the chat we had was specifically about, obviously, you had this kind of wonderful weekend over there and kind of making some good from the bad, I suppose, of losing the WRC round, obviously, because the way the world is at the moment. But you guys managed to put together a weekend and a weekend, I suppose, which in a strange way, probably locally, with the live... the live stage and stadium and things like that and the live TV, you might have kind of got away with this in the sense of new fans, etc.
Yeah, it was a fantastic opportunity, particularly the rally sprint we ran on the Sunday to expose the sport to, I guess, different motorsport fans. So we had the likes of Darren Kelly, who's a 2 times drift champion, Michael Pickens, who's an absolute legend in speedway cars, and Shane Van Gisbergen, who's better known to the circuit races in Australia.
Jack's a big fan. Jack Banyan is absolutely a big fan. Yeah, so that's how all this came about. So no, it's good to hear. Sorry, he'll be so pleased you mentioned them.
Well, he'll be so pleased that he managed to actually come out and win the event, which was just an amazing storyline on the Sunday at the Battle of Jack's Ridge. But that was, I mean, both events were fabulous. Obviously, it was massively disappointing that we couldn't have the WRC down here in New Zealand for 2020. We use stages that would have made up day two, but that rally also finished with what would have been the power stage for the WRC event, which is a purpose-built road by a guy by the name of Andrew Hawkswood, who's a former national champion over here, and his son Jack, hence the Jack's Ridge name. it's just 6.5 k's of the most amazing bits of road that represent everything that is New Zealand. And that's where we finished off. And then on the Sunday, we had a 2 km rally sprint, which was really designed around spectators, but not in the same way that, not a little Mickey Mouse spectator stage. This was proper. There was jumps, there was big cambers, there was tightening corners. There was even stuff that caught out, you know, our best Hayden Padden, and he rolled out of the event. So the event really delivered everything and more.
I suppose, you know, I feel a little bit. You mentioned Hayden, and Hayden's a regular guest with us. I always feel, and I don't know whether I'm misrepresenting New Zealand rallying a little bit, but over the last few years, he's been such a flag flyer for you guys, and he's kind of carried the hopes of trying to get rallying, you know, in New Zealand back into the World Rally Championship. It kind of feels like he's been an ambassador, and he's had it on his shoulders. And in some ways, this was going to be a grand opportunity to kind of take a little bit of the pressure off him of being kind of the man at the forefront of it. And sadly, that didn't quite happen.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and obviously he had a program lined up to do several events, which came out, unfortunately, after it wasn't going to happen. But, yeah, he's done a magnificent amount of work with the likes of you know, Michael Goldstein, who was the CEO, and PJ Peter Johnston, the chairman of the event, to try and get it down here. So those guys did so much work, and yeah, for 8 years we were pushing, and yeah, unfortunately it was robbed by COVID. But you know, there's been a lot of good groundwork done there, and there was an E-series attached to what we did over the weekend as well. And a few things like that. So, hey, yeah, there's still constant dialogue, and hopefully, yeah, that work hasn't gone unnoticed. And you know, in the future, we might go. Obviously, 2021 calendar's out, and we're not on that. But you know, we're certainly in dialogue with the promoter, and hoping for 2022.
I mean, and listen, I hope so too. And I suppose, you know, off the back of this, it's great to hear that this event, that, or the two events back to back, were a great success. I suppose where I was going when I mentioned Hayden as well is, how is the kind of the grassroots for you guys at the moment? You know, are we getting new people into the sport? Are youngsters wanting to go rallying? Have we managed to keep it relevant in New Zealand? Because this is something that we're struggling with a little bit here, if truth be told.
Yeah, it's always a struggle, I think. We're actually really lucky. We look like we've got a really strong sort of front-wheel drive, basically Fiesta-based field in the National Championship for next year, with a few young guys that are coming through the ranks. I wouldn't say we're blessed with lots of them, but the young ones that are coming through seem to be certainly to have some potential. So hopefully, you know, that blossoms and you know, events like Jack's Ridge, as we talk about, exposed us to a whole different audience. And hopefully, you know, it only takes one or two to look at it and go, well, that looked pretty cool. Maybe I'll give that a go.
Yeah, and listen, that's what we all go through. But, you know, as I say, we have, you know, we've had Hayden on. We've had, you know, Molly Taylor from Australia on numerous times as well. And we've even had the Bates brothers on with us and stuff like that. And, you know, as much as I hate to kind of lump you guys together as Australia, New Zealand, but you all have the same issues of trying to progress in the sport. Invariably, you have to come to Europe, which kind of makes it 2, 3, 4, 5 times more expensive than what it would be if it was, you know, somebody here trying to get going in the sport. So I fear sometimes that almost it can be so daunting to get into the sport at the highest level that, you know, you guys may lose some people just by the sheer fact of just how big it would be to try and do something.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, David Holder's probably a classic example. Came and did the JWRC in 2018 and just couldn't afford to take the next step. Unfortunately, geographically, yes, it's not so easy from down this part of the world. We've got a pretty strong championship, and obviously that's not on a world stage, but, you know, a lot of guys sort of, yeah, that becomes a probably a more realistic goal than, I guess, you know, moving into the WRC for a European competitor.
I do find that kind of fascinating, that thing that, you know, we're always trying to entice people into the sport, and you know, we were talking to Mark Duez obviously earlier, and you know, he was talking about what goes on in Belgium with regards to, you know, young drivers and the enticement and what they did with Thierry Neuville, and obviously the payback that these guys give once they get there. Do you guys have, you know, any kind of schemes over there for young drivers, enticements and trying to get them going? Do you have anything like that with your like association?
We've had the odd thing over the years. There's nothing currently in place, and unfortunately, obviously, with the situation that we've had this year, motorsport suffered pretty badly. So, you know, any sort of extra funding hasn't necessarily that might have been there, certainly isn't now. So, you know, we've had programs in the past, like Rally New Zealand ran a Rising Stars program a few years ago, which allowed Hayden to turn his Pirelli Star campaign into a PWRC campaign. It also bought out Stephen Barker, who went on to win the Fiesta Sporting Trophy International Shootout, and spent a couple of years with M Sport, and bought us Ben Hunt, who's our reigning national rally champion. He's won that twice now. He came through that program as well. So that one was particularly effective. But in the last 10 years or so, unfortunately, just the funding hasn't been there to make that happen.
The other thing which I've kind of noticed as well, and again, you know, I was in a previous life, I was relatively involved with the Asia Pacific Championship, and that always seemed to be far more, I suppose, palatable, I suppose, from a financial point of view, than trying to take on, you know, a WRC campaign. But that obviously now doesn't have the manufacturers in it, and that almost seems too fragmented now to look as a viable destination. Have I got that right?
Yeah, I think that really suffered when we went from the production based, you know, Group N cars into the S2000 and the R Formula cars. Just because of the cost of bringing down an R5 car to New Zealand, we've got a equivalent sort of Formula AP4 here that's probably realistically $300,000 New Zealand dollars a car, and to bring down a brand new R5 car, you're looking at more like $500,000. So, and then with the cost of getting around the Asia Pacific region, so they reinvented the way that championship ran last year, which looked like it was going to be on for a lot of success this year. Chris Meek was coming down, Molly Taylor was working on a campaign, you know, names like that. Andrew Hawkswood, who built our Jacks Bridge stage, was a big advocate of that series as well. So there was a lot of momentum building for the APRC into 2020, and unfortunately that all got killed. And at the moment we're sitting and waiting to find out what's going to happen with that in 2021, because border restrictions and all that sort of stuff makes it very, very difficult to get around.
Funny enough, you just mentioned the R category there, and you know, obviously the AP4 and the AP4 plus cars for you guys as well, you know, they were going to be the answer to I suppose people trying to get R5 cars down there. But I am starting to see more R5 cars certainly appearing in Australia. I don't know what's happening for you guys, but I just wonder whether people are kind of looking at it now going, do you know what, we can buy this off the shelf and it's already developed. And, you know, I'm thinking, I suppose, again, I'm thinking about, you know, the likes of the Mini that they tried to develop over in Australia. Eli Evans, I think it was, who tried to do that, who ended up just renting an R5 car in the end, I think. But I think the Mini will come back. But are we getting to the stage now where perhaps some of these older R5 cars might be finding the way down to, you know, New Zealand, in the fact that, you know, people are buying stuff off the shelf? You know, you've got a couple of guys down there who are looking after R5s. I'm trying to think of one in particular that was very heavily involved with Evos that is now, I think, a bit of an agent for M Sport.
Neil Allport. Yeah.
Neil Allport, yeah. You know, is this now perhaps, you know, could this now be opening doors, and could this effectively now be bringing homologated cars back into play for you guys?
Yes. So we've now got four in the country, to two Fords and two Skodas. The Skodas are actually, ironically, ex-APRC MRF cars.
Yeah.
There's not a heap of new builds underway. I say that, but the car that Shane Van Gisbergen won, Jack's Ridge, was a brand-new built AP4 Mitsubishi Mirage. So there is the odd bit of interest around. Obviously, the Bateses have just announced that they've committed to building two new Yaris GRs in Australia. Although their rules in Australia are slightly different, just to confuse you.
Yeah.
But especially in New Zealand, there's a real mentality around building cars in your shed as opposed to buying them. Okay. So there are some people, and definitely the people that have gone down the R5 route, prefer the fact mostly engine development. So the AP4 cars all control through the suspension, and the drivetrain is either X-Track R5 or SADEV Rallycross. So that's all developed. The suspension's completely controlled. All the cars go on a jig, all the uprights and everything are the same, and there's two options of damper. So it's really just the engine development and a little bit of aero work, but that's largely controlled. So it's the engine development, but a lot of the Kiwi way is to sort of tinker with them and do that sort of work yourself.
Okay. Interesting. I kind of remember rallying being like that for us here, and then very quickly people are buying stuff off the shelf. Because there's a lot of rally. I'd love to know what the percentage is, Blair. I don't know what it's the same for you, but I'm convinced that there's more rally cars probably, I don't know, obviously, apart from what's going on in the world right now. I mean, aside from this, there's so many unfinished projects, shall we say, in people's barns and garages across the world of rally cars, probably more than anything else.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky over here. As I said, the championship's pretty strong. I can think of maybe three or four AP4 cars that aren't out there running at the moment. The good old rumour mill suggests that we might see one or two of them next year. But the rumour mill's a wonderful thing, and we certainly learned in promotion land that a rumour's only as good as what turns up on the entry list. So, we it's pretty strong over here. Thankfully, we didn't get hit financially as hard, apart from the tourism sector, which was quite big. But yeah, the majority of businesses have actually been going quite strong in New Zealand. So a lot of guys are really ramping up towards the 21 season.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, listen, Blair, thanks for coming on, talking about obviously the event we should have talked about 2 weeks ago. And also, as I say, I'm just really interested to see what's going on in other parts of the world with regards to national rallying at the moment, because it's something which is a great source of debate here in the UK, and it is in other parts of the world as well at the moment. I know over in the States, obviously, they're having similar things, trying to entice people in, and you know, they seem to be getting there to some degree as well. So it's good to get some opinions and thoughts of what's going on in another part of the world as well. But when we get 2021 underway and we start the season, when are you scheduled to start? When's your first event, Blair, in 2021?
So we've got rallies through March, but the first national championship round for us is Rally Otago in April. Hopefully, if the borders open up, Mikko Hirvonen's meant to be coming down to compete in the classic section of that rally. And, so that's we're starting to build up towards that now for the first of six rounds in the NZRC.
Brilliant. Listen, we're going to speak to you a lot nearer that time anyway, so thank you for your time this week. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome to the final section of Absolute Rally, and welcome to, we've not had him on for ages. He was our man in Junior World Rally Championship for a couple of years, and then obviously with all what's going on in the world, we kind of lost him. He's gone off the radar, but he's back, and he's back in WRC, and this time he's making his debut in WRC in an R5 car, or should I say a WRC2 car. Tom Williams, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No. Listen, it's really, really, really important because we've talked nonsense about what Monza was going to be like for the last couple of weeks and also at the top of the podcast as well. But you've just finished a recce on these mountain roads. Tell us a little bit about them, Tom. What are they looking like?
Yeah, I would say I was in a similar position to you to start with. I didn't really know. I knew as much information as everyone else did about, is it going to go ahead? Is it not going to go ahead? And all these questions, and is it just going to be a Monza show and just round a load of cones? So I really didn't know. But when the opportunity came, it was suddenly full on, get everything ready. I just had no idea we were going to be doing this event until about 2 weeks ago. And we just managed to pull the budget together and everything. And we're here, and we've just finished the recce, as you said. And yeah, it's a full, definitely world championship status rally. The stages are serious. Classic Italian roads on Saturday that we just finished, and they were probably the hardest I've done in a long time. There was full fog conditions with the clouds all dropping through the stages, and there was ice on the top, a lot of ice on the top. It was a mix of Monte Carlo, GB, and this Italian tricky hairpin, so a bit of everything. And then it goes down, of course, into the Monza circuit, which is really good fun, very tricky because it goes onto this muddy gravel to go from section to section. But going up Parabolica for the first time ever was an experience. I just couldn't believe how steep it is. You feel quite nauseous when you're on it. And just thinking that people would actually be going full speed round and round at that high and having accidents is just something else.
Wow. Well, you've just painted a fairly good picture, Tom. It actually makes a lot of my questions now redundant, it has to be said. But I was trying to get an idea, and you know, I think you have well and truly nailed it, because you know, we were all concerned, you know, with the way the world is at the moment, that perhaps we would lose these stages and effectively we would end up with just a circuit. Obviously, that hasn't happened. Is it? You know, let's put it this way. I suppose you've gone into this with your eyes wide closed in many ways, because nobody could know what was coming up because of the way the world changes and the way the rallies have been changing. But in many ways, taking into account you've signed up, you're making your debut in WRC2. Is this perhaps a slightly tougher task than you were expecting now, making your debut in WRC2?
Yeah, well, we're trying to work out the options and trying to see, is it worth it? Is it, what's the reason behind doing the event? And we just thought there was, with everything going on, there was no events, everything was getting cancelled. And Monza was a great stage rally. That's where we want to be. And it's on tarmac. But we've done gravel this year in the R5, but we haven't done tarmac yet. And obviously, I'd love to learn it, but it would be better doing, obviously, a smaller event and a test and just building into it, not a WRC event. But as the world is, and it's really tricky, being a circuit to start with is quite good for breaking points, a lot of mileage, a lot of proper pace notes, and we can do so going around the circuit and really push the car to its limits and find and have a play with the car. No pressure at all. We're not in a championship. However, I wasn't expecting fog and ice and the full-blown Italian stages on the Saturday. That really, when I saw them, recce, of course, I love it, and it's very similar to Corsica, and it's a real challenge. But yeah, never driving the R5 car, and I know how fast they are on these stages. It's going to be definitely in the tricky end of the market.
Hey, listen, you've just mentioned pace notes. Of course, we've also got a new co-driver for this event as well.
Yes, a local co-driver from the south of Italy. Completely new, another one, and this is going to be a bit of a different experience. But we've got on really well over the last few weeks. We've been doing a lot of practice over the weekend prior to this event, some old Italian stages. Georgia studied English at university, so our English is very good, and it actually works in hand. It's like having you have a Welsh accent, a Scottish accent, an Irish accent. An Italian accent in English notes works quite well.
Okay.
So, we're looking forward to it. And but it's a lot easier when you're going around to a lot of the locals who don't speak any English. It helps me out a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. I don't know a great deal about George. I probably should have looked on the infamous EWRC.com. Is this her debut in WRC?
Yeah. First WRC event. Lots of knowledge and lots of experience on the roads around it. But yes, they'd be on WRC.
I suppose from the point of view of, you know, again, because you're so succinct in delivering your answers, Tom, and I always forget how succinct you can be. In some ways, you've already alluded to the answers to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. With regards to expectation, I suppose, is the qualification you've made in doing this event now, you've squared the circle, as it were, to do the rally. What is your expectations from it?
So, yeah, of course, we're really in the deep end of the of doing this event. But, however, I love tarmac. I haven't done so much of it, but I love doing it. And as soon as I can just get my head round just driving the car at least once on shakedown, I feel pretty happy driving in the conditions where it's quite wet and damp, GB kind of weather. And I've got the team, Don Buckley, behind us, and they're just so helpful with the setup and just trying new things for me. And I think if we can have a clean result, good pace notes, and just not focus on everyone else, which I think, because it's the final round of the World Championship, everyone's going to be going very, very fast and very crazy on this event. It's a new event, new pace notes. Everyone has to come here and win or crash. That's it. They have to get maximum points here. So I think a lot of people will have a lot of stupid mistakes made. So we're here to learn, but of course I'm competitive and I want to get the best result I can. So I think if we can keep it clean and not get any punctures and just focus on the pace notes, we can get quite a good result. And that's what we're looking at.
Have you allowed yourself to cast a glance to 2021 off the back of this already, Tom? Have you started to think about perhaps what the next steps are?
Yes, I think that's everyone's. We were doing it anyway before this. Everyone's focusing on next year. There's a lot of confidence around in the world with how everything is with vaccines. So everyone seems to be in any industry. Everyone wants to push forward now and get on with everything for next year. So, yeah, British rallying, it looks like it's going to be a struggle still until later in the year, which is a real shame because it's perfect for me to learn forward by. But it's looking like it's going to be in other areas in Europe. Opening up events before that. So I think if we can pull the budget together and we can make a few things happen, European events, just learning to start with. WRC, it's hard, but we would love, WRC is where we want to be, but it's just that classic budget. But that's where we would like to be. And of course, any event, just to get the mileage in the R5s is what we will want.
Perfect. Listen, Tom, thanks for joining us. Obviously, I know you're in the service park now. I always love doing these where, you know, when this goes out, it'll be a little bit further into the week, obviously. But obviously, you've just finished the recce, so it's a really good way of getting an idea of what's coming up. And I'm sure, obviously, the preview program on WRC and stuff is going to cover all that. But having somebody who actually does it as well, that's so much better. So, listen, we send our best, all of us do, and we wish you the very best of luck for the weekend, okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
Really good to speak to you.
Yeah, really good to speak to you too. Folks, that has been Absolute Rally for this week. Thank you for the download. Thank you for the shares. Bring a friend along to the next episode. That'll be really good. And the ill-fated Christmas quiz will be with us in a couple of weeks' time. But of course, we will look back on Monza next week. We'll be back same time, same place, in the podcast hall next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.